Let me ask you all something. What does this communicate?
Don't interact with me.
That's right. I'm protected by the pulpit, which means I'm protected by any interaction. Anything you say just bounces off the pulpit and goes right back to you because I am the authority. I am protected here. I've got my this communicates information. I've got information here that you all can't see. Only I can see it, and so it's bouncing off to you. And so that is a communication. It's part of what you're communicating. So if you have a pulpit in front of you, you're communicating something. Just let that be known. What does this communicate? What we're doing here.
Openness.
Okay. A little bit more openness, but still this idea that we do have some. But it's set to the side. What does that communicate being set to the side? It's not as important. It's not the center. The center is what? Yeah, what's going on here? Rome has his to the side, I have mine to the side, and so this part is the main interaction, but this is not unimportant.
And so what's the difference when Michael picked up his pulpit and put it in the center? Not only is it creating a barrier, but why the center? What's so important about, why not just say, well, the pulpit's over here, offset? It's the focal point. What else? What else does it communicate from the center?
Control,
yes.
He's the one who's talking. He needs all the attention.
Yeah, he's the focal point. He's got all the attention. It's an issue of control. What else does it communicate? No.
Well, along that line, I was in New England churches and some European churches, the pulpit is off to the side.
Yeah. And in all Reformation era, through the whole 15th and 16th century, you go to Martin Luther's church, and it's way off to the side, and it's quite elevated. It's in a little box. What does it communicate when it's in the center? Whenever anything's in the center. Focal point, we've talked about that.
Position of authority.
Authority. There's an issue of authority. You can challenge me if I'm sitting over here. Look, I'm left wing, right? I mean, I'm sitting out here. But, boy, if I'm standing right here, I'm right at the center. I'm now communicating something different than standing here. This is less assuming to you when I'm teaching from here than if I'm teaching from here, even with or without a pulpit. So even the position on the stage begins to matter.
Well, I was going to say that's something you see a lot. You know, if you've grown up going to the same type of church your whole life, you don't notice it as much. When you get into different churches, you know, the churches I grew up going to, the altar's in the center, the pulpit's in the center, the baptismal area's in the center.
Yes.
And if you go to a different church, you don't think about it until you get in a different venue. When, you know, the first time I went into a Catholic service, the pulpit was over here, and it just all of a sudden you notice it because it feels different.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And what's it communicating? What are how many churches, whichever church you go to, have the pulpit in the center? How many people go to a church that has the pulpit in the center? Just about everyone. Let me ask you this way: does anyone go to a church where the pulpit is not in the center? No. Okay, so what is that communicating about our churches in general? What we're saying is, for the most part, most of the churches we go to tend to put the pulpit in the center. What's the general message we're saying when we walk in the door? Yeah, there's an issue of authority. What's the most important thing that's going to happen that morning? Yeah, it's going to be all about the sermon. And music might be supplemental, but your music leader is probably going to lead beside the pulpit, right? Because the pulpit's too big to get behind, and it's not conducive to playing a guitar or whatever, so he's going to go to the side.
And he goes to the side because he doesn't want the interaction to be from him. He wants participation, and that doesn't communicate participation from behind the pulpit. It communicates the protection. Now let me ask you this. Whenever I'm standing here and teaching like this, what is the difference from whenever I was sitting down? I'm more engaged personally. I have moved from here. Now it is my turn. Okay, I want to say something. What does it communicate whenever I am walking through? Okay, interaction. What does it communicate whenever I sit down? Like this. Or we're in a very casual discussion, right? What does it communicate whenever you ask a question to me and I look around? You know, I start to say, anybody? Anybody else? Can somebody else answer that? What does that communicate? Okay. It's that is the main thing that we're trying to do here. If I bounce every question off me, even if I have the answer, and even if I'm excited about that answer, and even if I want you all to know what I have to say because I am the authority here, or I am the center here. I want to bounce that off. I don't want to be the center. I don't want to be the authority. I want the community to start interacting. And so the more that we can create an atmosphere like that, then you have created a community environment to where learning is taking place with all of us. This will communicate, we're all in this together. The further you get away from the stage and the further you get away from the pulpit, communicates that.
Now, Michael, just stay there for a moment. Just stay there. Now, if Michael's over there and I'm wandering over here, and that's the way the whole class goes, all 4 weeks that we're together. He's over there, I'm wandering over here, and then I end up back there, Michael's over there. What does that communicate?
Division.
Possibly division. What else does it communicate? If we're always spread out, if we're always in and amongst you and never there.
Unorganized.
What could communicate something very good and very valuable becomes then disruptive. Because now no one's facing the way the seats are all facing. I'm standing off, he's standing in, and then we're moving around, and we're never there, we're unorganized. We have no content to give. We just want to talk, right? It's good, but if we just did that, it turns into something bad. Rob, you had a point?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. It's not just unorganized. It's like we're all sharing our opinion, but there are no facts.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is important to see, that it all matters. It's good to interact, it's good to be down and up and everything, but to do just one thing then can be defeating. It can be self-defeating. Yes?
I think that a point needs to be made that we not bifurcate or dichotomize having authority and having authoritarianism, because there is a sense in which there has to be some authority.
Yes.
I know a lot of people are turned off by the reign of reason, and in postmodern circles, it's better not to have it. It's better that everybody share their opinion, and there's a lot of information, and everybody's an expert. That's why you have blogs, web pages,
yeah.
Countless material.
Yeah.
So we need someone that would sift through all that and still bring a little bit of authority, but yet recognize.
Well, you all would not have come to this class if you didn't think that there was going to be somebody up here teaching. More than likely, most of you, if we said we're going to have 4 weeks sharing about teaching, you know, no, there's going to be no leader. It's just everybody's going to show up. Most of you probably would not have come because, I mean, as valuable as that is, it becomes just a bunch of Christian chatter, doesn't it? Everybody's chattering. And so, again, it comes down to the wisdom that we're trying to teach, not just a single methodology or anything, but the availability of all of these, and then you as a teacher being able to insert the right method at the right time in the right venue, whatever that venue is providing for. What if we would have come and done this? We had this in this classroom. Why didn't we have it in the sanctuary? Yeah, I mean we're sitting up high on the stage, and the higher you are on that stage, the further away you are pulled from the audience. That's why you see some pastors coming, they're stepping down off the stage in order to engage.
I think back to that concept of everybody is educated and coming to it, I'm a little more cynical. I think the average person in the groups, bad ideas are going to come up, false facts, and we've got to have a strong leader. It's a grave responsibility for the teacher because you have to gracefully save the class from the bad input.
Yeah, and that's why the dangers. That's why, as we'll talk about, there are dangers in small groups. If I said let's all break up into five or six and we'll meet back in 15 minutes, what's the danger in that? You all discuss these issues. What's the danger?
Error.
Blind leading the blind. I mean, I may come back and you're discussing everything from, you know, what color of dress you bought last week to, you know how your husband's been treating you wrong. You know, I mean, who knows what's going to be going on? I have no idea. I can't control that environment, and so you've got to be very intentional. Whenever you break up into small groups every week, sometimes that just becomes a pooling of ignorance. You know. Or it just becomes a time whenever you get your social interaction taken care of. You got to be very intentional with the way you engage these different avenues.
There's some really good examples on being intentional on the different formats for whatever type of teaching you want. Whenever there's a an election year. On TV, you see the town hall meetings, you see the candidates getting out with the people, you see the debates, you see all of these forums, you see this happening. And even throughout the regular non-election years on some of the public channels or C-SPAN, you can see a lot of this happening. Mm-hmm. And it's to inform the people of whatever the topic is and whatever persuasion they want the people to follow. There are a lot of great examples like that.
Yeah. Well, they've thought it through a lot. I think that sometimes the church does not think these things through. Why?
We're reactionary.
Reactionary? Why else? Why does the church say we don't need any of these things?
Traditionalism.
But mainly because we have
the Holy Spirit.
The Holy Spirit
is supposed to cover all our ignorance or cover all our lack of intentionality.
If you're not learning, it's not my fault. It's not the lecture's fault. It's not the venue's fault. It's not the method's fault. It's that you are not submitting to the Holy Spirit. I am submitting to the Holy Spirit because the lecture, the sermon, is the Holy Spirit given way of to teach in the church. We've perfected the sermon. I mean, if you want to learn how to do a good sermon, go to Dallas Theological Seminary. I don't think there's a better place in the world that goes through preaching classes the way they do. But they teach how you do a sermon. And so we leave there thinking, sermon. Anytime I teach about Christ, sermon. Children, sermon. Grown-up, sermon. Teenagers, sermon. Because that's what I've learned, is the sermon. It's the way that God uses to communicate His truth. Movies, devil. Okay. Drama, devil. Any music, devil. Anything else, devil.
And think about that. You go to Dallas Seminary and you get that. You have an opportunity to share, I'm going to use a neutral term, or at least vaguely neutral, on a Sunday morning, so you preach. Okay, well, that's probably something. And then you have this social event on Friday night. Oh, would you mind saying a few words? And what do? You crank out a sermon again on a Friday night at a social event. Can you just see? It's one thing to crank out a sermon on a Sunday morning, but at a Friday night social event, if we're just programmed to a methodology. Sorry, we've been.
No, it's fine. Another thing is interesting. You answered or made a comment about something that he said earlier about everybody having an opinion or being an expert or whatever. But another thing is as far as positioning and centrality, it's interesting that we've got the table set up and the chairs are all focused, so any interaction between people in the group has to bounce off the front of the stage before it gets there. It's a different feeling if you walk in and all the chairs are in a circle.
Right.
And then you have interaction between group members and it doesn't have to go through the reference of the teacher and that authority.
Yeah.
Everything matters. It's such a world of difference for me to stand here and talk from here and then for me to talk from here. What am I communicating to you now? Standing at the back. I'm still in the center, but now I'm at the back. Am I warm and inviting, or am I cold now? Everything matters. How the chairs are set, what the room looks like, what messages we're communicating, what we do, our postures, our speaking, all those types of things, hand gestures, how things are set up. Everything communicates something. And so we want you to start to be much more intentional about thinking through what you're communicating in whatever your venue. Teaching your children, your home. Do you always teach in a certain room? Do you always have a lesson place? Do you teach in any room? Is it more informal where you can do it at the kitchen table? Is it, you know, all those things communicate something. So if you want to create, for example, if you ever studied under Howard Hendricks, he'll always tell you about stories, and they wanted to learn. His goal is always to teach at any opportunity. So his was not room specific. So he'd tell about when they were at the kitchen table eating, and then this question came up, and then he'd illustrate it with the salt and the pepper and the knife, and he'd do that. But then in the living room while they're watching TV, they'd do it differently. They'd pull out a board game, and then he'd make an example that way. And so he's teaching with intention, but he's trying to use the various venues he happened to be at, in this case, all within his home. So we're trying to show you how all these things matter. Every part of what we're trying to do matters as to what we're communicating.
As someone has already said, we remember 10% of what we hear. And someone said that would equate you with a genius if you're really able to remember all 10%. 50% of what you hear and see, and 90% of what you hear, see, and do. So, what does that tell you? The passive learning environment is not very effective for the learning that we are talking about, or remembering, or taking the information and remembering long term. It's not an very effective environment. It will never be an effective environment. It can't be an effective environment because you can't control things. You cannot guarantee in any way that people are listening. They could be anywhere else in the world besides where you are at, and you have no idea. And so 10% is the high point, just because not only are you having trouble staying awake, not only are you having trouble trying to figure out where I'm at, because you can't raise your hand and you say, where are we at again? What was that you had talked about before? Or clarify this. Maybe the whole audience didn't get a point. You have no clue that they didn't get a point. There's nothing to do about it. There's no way you can correct that because you are not where they're at. There's no hands being raised. 50% of what they hear and see, and so right now you are hearing and you are seeing, and then 90% of what they hear, see, and do. And so in every environment that you can, or every venue that allows for it, what do you want to do? All three. You want to get them engaged with their mind. You want to get them asking questions, figuring things out on their own. You want them to be able to see any visual that you can of what you are teaching, if there's a visual available. Now, having said that, Rome, I didn't ask you this before, but what do you think is the easiest type of lesson to prepare?
Just speaking. The scariest thing is to have someone put up their hand and ask a question that you're not prepared for. So just simply talking without anything else.
So as long as you can control the environment, it's a lot easier.
Yep, absolutely.
Because if they don't know where I'm at, I know where I'm at.
Right.
The Holy Spirit knows where I'm at, and the Holy Spirit can transfer to them where I'm at if he wants to.
And clearly they're unspiritual if they're not where I'm at.
That's right.
Because I prayed. I prayed before I taught. You know, I prayed, you know, that the Holy Spirit would bless these words, so he must be.
Mm-hmm. What's so the most difficult?
The most difficult is to, in even using this slide as an example, to engage all the senses, as we've talked about. To have someone not only hear the words, but to see something in illustration that's effective and that's complementary. In other words, just creating an illustration for an illustration is easy to do, but it's ineffective because people don't know, well, what does this picture have to do, or what does this movie in this class, this movie clip, have to do with what we're talking about? But to make those things engage and then have them do something. So to involve all the senses.
So really, probably Christian chatter is the easiest. I mean, because you're up there chattering, you haven't even prepared your chatter.
Yeah, right, not even making an outline. I guess it's just easy, it's just to off the top of your head talk about something.
Then the second would be just something where you're passively speaking, giving a lecture or something like that, sermon or a lecture. Then third would be to something to where they are engaged in some degree, trying to creatively engage. I think that's what it comes down to. Like Rome said, you have to think they're going to ask questions. They may lead us off track. The questions may be something that I can't answer. The question may be something that I didn't think of that will take us off track, and we must go off track in order to get back on track. All kinds of variables. You introduce variables, and then all of a sudden it's more difficult, much more difficult. Maybe you're not going to get through your lesson. Because a sermon, I can prepare it and I can practice. I mean, I can go night before, go through it, and it's 45 minutes, perfect, right on track. But I can't prepare for how much time we're going to spend here because I don't know how much you all are going to be able to be getting the things that I'm saying, or that I'm going to be getting where you are at, so that I can help produce the environment to be conductive to where you all are at.
One of the things that we've learned, Michael and I, in teaching through in the theology program, we're teaching basic theology for lay people. We have studied this ourselves. We've been taught this in seminary. And one of the things that we're not prepared for as we interact is what issues become very intriguing, for lack of better words, to the students in the class. We'll present something and we'll think that the key point in the lesson, the real thing that's quite radical, or the thing that's quite has a lot of implications, is right near the end, and so we're plodding along trying to get to the end, to that key point, and it's really only 6 minutes in we come across something that, whoa, you know, people are drawn, and then they have questions, and well what about this text, and I don't understand, and look at the implications, and they're all caught up on something that we thought we had prepared for. We were just marched through, and the big issue would be right near the end, and the class has a big issue near the beginning. And so we're rethinking. That's one of the advantages of having two teachers, is we're thinking, even as I'm speaking right now, Michael is thinking. He knows how many slides we want to get through before our next break and where we want to go. And so he can evaluate time while I'm talking and vice versa. So all those things start to play. As soon as you make it interactive, as soon as you do that, then you start to lose this control. I didn't think point two was going to be the big point. I thought point four was the big point. And everyone's tied up with point two. So an effective teacher focuses on point two. You've got to. You can't think, well, what you were going to present in point four, because to you, point four was the radical thing. Point two to the class is the radical thing. And then that becomes what you need to focus on. Because you're not teaching for yourself, you're teaching for your students. So if they're struggling with point two, work on point two. There's a point there. Opal?
So I think